Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Game of Thrones. The Walking Dead. Westworld. No, that's the West Wing. Westworld. There have been many podcasts which seek to analyse the complexities, the depth, the plot lines, the hidden story arcs, the beauty of these productions. Quite simply, the world doesn't need another one, which is why we're applying that level of discussion to the bottom of the televisual barrel and scraping it with a weekly celebration of The One Show! Hello and welcome, welcome, and thrice the brinded cat did welcome.
What?
To the One Show, the podcast that, with cats in mind, picks through the carcass of a week's worth of One Shows, like the Croydon Cat Killer, which now turns out to be a fox, of course, chewing its way through the guts of Tiddles. I am John Holmes, and this is where we open the Pandora's box of BBC One early evening flagship magazine show and, well, in many ways, let all of the evils therein burst out. What a week it's been on the green sofas, hasn't it? This week, a peacock confuses Danny Dyer, a potato is in a bag, and the One Show graphics department go into overdrive. Joining me for counselling, having watched it all, are the One Show regular Mark Haynes, and this week, two other guests. Two! Count them! No, literally count them, Mark.
Two.
Thank you. Who make their the One Show debuts. The scurrilous voices behind the scribbling pens of the magnificent celebrity-stalking gossip website Potbitch, Camilla Wright and Chris Lockery. Welcome to the One Show.
Pleasure to be
here.
We
should applaud like, when they come on the One Show. We have to mock that. You know when you've seen it. They get sometimes the big name get the audience. Who are they? To just clap a bit and then they come on and it's
so half-hearted.
But ours was genuine for you.
Oh yeah.
It's weird having you on because obviously you immerse yourselves in the world of celebrity in exactly the same way as the One Show.
Thank you so much.
All the time. So you're familiar with how it all works in a sense.
You're talking specifically about celebrity there and not the One Show because
I'm talking about celebrity.
Right.
If we umbrella mushroom, to use a Trump cockism, put that over celebrity, the One Show is a sort of conveyor belt of people flogging their stuff.
Mm.
What we were going to ask you, Mark and I were talking about this before. And whether or not to go immediately inappropriate and how inappropriate can we be, is there are a lot of people on the One Show all the time. You must have stories or have stories come across your pot bitch desk about the majority of them. The big question is, have you got anything on Matt Baker and Alex Jones?
There is something on...
This is the best thing.
I know.
The pause there thrilled me.
Oh, no.
The pause is actually slightly more administrative than juicy. As we were walking over here, we did say, what would have been really sensible to do is check our archive for mentions of Matt Baker and Alex Jones. And so that's what that knowing look was. It wasn't actually anything too juicy.
It's actually, we did check Matt Baker this week and neither of us can remember what it is. So it's obviously something pretty boring.
You've watched the One Show before. This was your first delve into it because, you know, we have to force you to watch it for this podcast. Mm.
I was almost on the One Show.
Camilla, tell us more.
About 10 years ago, there was a Potbitch annual, which we did with Random House, and at the time was really excited about doing, but by the time the book came out, book publishing world is so long that I just didn't really want to be there anymore.
It's worth saying it, that is my dad's favourite book. My dad is 75. The Potbitch Annual is his favourite book.
Thank you. That's the
time.
Credibility ratchet up.
The audience you were going for. Yeah.
He hasn't heard of anyone in it, but it was brilliantly put together.
Likes all the pictures of mannequins shitting on each other. Yeah.
It's so well bound.
And I went into Random House just before it was published and met the PR person for the first time, and they said, "Oh, you'll never guess what. I've got you on the one show." And I sort of said, I think we're going to have a problem about where you're pitching this book.
Do you know what?
And
what's
it went
funny?
Downhill.
This week was the one show video that they'd contacted me to ask me to be on.
Yes.
Went
Whoa.
Out.
I was going to ask you about this. I was going to bring this
so
up.
So a while ago, I told the story about meeting Roger Moore when I was a kid. And I met him again when I was an adult. And it went a bit viral and it was all exciting. And I got contacted just after we'd started doing this show to say, would you like to be on the one show? Would you come in? I thought it was a trap. I thought they were going to stab me. But it turned out it wasn't. It was actually to be on a very, very dull little piece about Roger Moore.
Yeah.
Which obviously has been sitting now on the shelves waiting. And this was the perfect opportunity in that they've got a new director for the new James Bond film. Thank God. Reach for that film.
That's right. And they do this. We've learned this. So Jay Rayner told us this. The films that you may assume are just shot for those individual episodes of The One Show, of course, absolutely not. They sit on a shelf. They could have been there for years. And they try and then tenuously link them to the guests. And occasionally these films just fall off the end of the shelf and never get shown ever. So absolutely right. The Roger Moore one. Now, it brings me very early, though, to the most interesting fact of the week.
I have exactly the same interesting fact of the week.
Is it to do
with the invention
of
the Magnum? Yep, it is. Yeah. Roger Moore, there was a book sending letters to people they wanted to speak to.
Yeah.
And most people sort of wrote to Mother Teresa or they wrote to Gandhi. And Roger Moore wrote to the chairman of Wall's Ice Creams to say, why don't you make a choc ice with a stick in it? And they showed the chap who was talking about this invention eating a Magnum.
Yeah.
Roger Moore invented the Magnum.
There we are. And that was the most interesting fact. I mean, we all saw it, right?
Yeah.
What did you make of the film? By the way, they should have called it The Wolf of PPK. Why were they calling it? That's a Magnum is not James Bond's gun. That is Dirty Harry's gun.
Off brand.
I mean, what are you doing?
Cold finger?
What did you make of this episode? So this was Roger Moore, and they tenuously got it in because of the Johnny English Rowan Atkinson, Ben Miller connection.
There's that saying, isn't there, that you should never meet your heroes. And I think there's also that you should never see your heroes on The One Show. Because I'm big fan of Rowan Atkinson's comedy. He has been hilarious in loads of things I've seen. And just to hit that intro they did with him where he drove in his own Aston Martin, whatever. Was so, and you know that was in at his insistence.
Yeah.
Please welcome the stars of the latest Johnny English movie. It's Rowan Atkinson and Ben.
Driving extremely slowly. It was one of my candidates for handbrake turn of the
week.
Because it was a literal boring handbrake
There's
turn.
There's a funny thing about Matt Baker, where Matt Baker asks really banal questions, and sometimes they get answers that are better than the question deserves. So Matt had said to him, "So, when did you buy that car?" You sort of go, that's a terrible question to ask Rowan Atkinson. And Rowan Atkinson ended up sort of saying, well, I sort of bought it a little bit before Johnny English,
with
film coming up.
Dodge in mind.
Big tax. Oh, suddenly that's tax deductible.
That's my first thought.
And Rowan, this is your Aston Martin.
Yes, this is mine, and it is the actual car in Johnny English Strikes Again, because we have a digital software billionaire as the enemy, as the villain in our movie. And so Johnny English's plan is to tackle him in a purely analog way. So it's an analog versus digital story.
Yes.
So we reject mobile phones and things like that. And an analog car was a very important part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And when did this car come into your life?
Not very long ago. Actually, only about 6 months before the film. To be honest, I had the movie in mind when I bought the car. I thought, if the story that we were working on continues to be the story that we shoot, that I thought that this could be the car. And I just think it looks great. I think it looks really nice.
In a weird way, that question was disarming, because you find out more about what the real Rowan Atkinson is like.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem that nice.
There was a weird bit as well when he was talking about things that don't make him laugh but do. And he said, there's a lot of things. And he spoke about somebody, I can't remember who the first one was, and said, I always found that very amusing. Oh, John Cleese. More recently, I suppose, Dame Edna Everidge.
What was
wow, you haven't laughed since like 1986. Jesus.
Actually, the best thing about it, I think, was an illustration of how they can turn even the most interesting anecdote into something really banal. Because Ben Miller had an anecdote about how he was mistaken for Ben Stiller at Cannes, which was actually quite a good story.
Yeah.
But it was like teed up with, so Ben, you, after the Roger Moore thing, you have a special connection with someone. And he was like, do I? He was like, oh, yeah, I do. With Alexander, yeah? And they went, no.
That's awful.
It's like, why didn't you practice this?
The whole episode was geared up to just make Ben Miller be pissed off.
Yeah.
The whole thing was about Rowan Atkinson. So even when they got out of the car, right, I thought the bit when they got out of the car at the beginning when it came on. So first of all, you know, that happened. They arrived in a car. They're on the forecourt. There's a new James Bond director. That gives us an excuse. Cut. Oh, look, who's this? Who's this making an entrance? And this slow Aston Martin drop. and they got Ben Miller got out the camera side, and Rowan Atkinson had to kind of walk round. So it was all about Ben Miller. And that was the last time on that programme anything was about Ben Miller. And then he came round, and of course Matt went, what an entrance. It wasn't. I mean, he's just a man in a slow car. And then the whole thing was, how good is Rowan Atkinson?
Yeah.
For
yeah.
half an hour.
They yeah. even asked Ben Miller, what's your funniest Rowan Atkinson moment?
And when he said, oh, it's from Mr. Bean's Holiday, I was like, there's a clip they've got queued up. There is no way that is actually his favourite Rowan Atkinson moment.
They also played the clip, and halfway through, I think Alex or Matt was going, this isn't very funny, Ben. And then he went, no, it goes a bit longer than this. And they had to sit there and watch it and go, oh, it's okay, yeah.
Imagine having your taste in jokes slagged off by Alex Jones. And...
But Ben, I mean, you know, I felt for him. I was thinking, yeah. You know, he's sitting there. He's in the... I know it's Rowan Atkinson, Johnny English film, but Ben... Miller, I was going to say Stiller then, you see how it works, has been in that film franchise for a long time. Nothing about him, was there? Nothing.
There was also a notable thing in this where they only had two films in this episode. They don't normally spend as long with the star. So whether or not Rowan Atkinson had agreed to do it with the proviso that he had a good sort of 10-minute section in there.
One of the films was about Rowan Atkinson. It was the best of Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, God. And they were explaining Mr. Bean. So they took Mr. Bean, which is... famous sort of silent comedy, and they just had members of the public describing what they saw on scene, which shucks any comedy awful. Out of Mr. Bean. Just people going, and so he just sees this thing and he's feeling very scared and he like nearly falls off but then doesn't quite, and then oh, it's brilliant. It just was like pulling teeth. It is the worst possible thing to have done to anyone
the bit
involved.
That shocked me the most in that film, bearing in mind it's clips of Rowan Atkinson's career, and you could pick so many, couldn't you, from Blackadder.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously going up to people going, what's your favourite bit of Rowan Atkinson? And this woman went, well, it was the and she said it was in the, they were in the Tudors. They're in the Tudors.
She did in the Tudors.
So Blackadder 2 then. Tudors. And so they showed the clip of the scene around the dinner table with Miriam Margolyes with some tits on her head, right, passing around a cock and balls shaped party at 7 o'clock on BBC One.
And even better, she said, my dad loved this so much that we used to go around looking for thingy shaped vegetable things.
She did.
Well, I think it was even worse than that. Like,
he'd never even seen Blackadder. I mean, it was a horrible story.
The woman just said, oh, the thingy shaped turnip. It wasn't vegetables. That would have made it all right.
Yeah.
And it didn't even say vegetables. She said, my dad always used to make us look for thingy shaped things after that.
Thingy shaped
things. This has gone dark. So he's like, come on, kids, bedtime. Why don't we go look for the thingy shaped thing? It's like, oh, God, this is 7 o'clock.
We're out cock spotting with dad.
At that point, they went to butterflies or something.
Edinburgh Butterflies, wasn't it?
Oh, that was dull.
I had this as a runner-up in Handbrake Turn of the Week, so with a feature whereby they talk about one thing and then awkwardly get to the next. And this was my runner-up, where they were talking to Rowan Atkinson and Ben Stiller Miller. and this was it, Angela Scanlon on this one?
Yes, yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. She said, now, just like Johnny English, George Maguire is never one to shy away from the mission.
Yes.
Oh, what? Tonight he's on the hunt for the Edinburgh Butterfly.
Angela Scanlon, I like it when she comes in because she sees every one of these shots that she gets when she's filling in for Alex. She goes, if I do well tonight, I will get this job full time. And she goes in. Every line is sassy and funny because she's going, I will kill the queen and I will become queen of the hive. She's merciless.
They did that thing which TV shows and radio packages do this all the time. It doesn't annoy me. It just makes me feel bad for the presenter, if indeed the presenter's written their own lines, but putting in the work to do a quirky intro. Mm. Right. So this was a great example of when this happened. So they go, he's been on the hunt for the elusive Edinburgh Butterfly. And Angela sort of went, oh, Edinburgh, I know, Edinburgh. Because she's like from, she's the Scotland. And then it cut to George Maguire, who is their sort of guy who does all the insecty stuff. He just went, Arthur's Seat, Holyrood Park, the Scottish National Parliament. I hardly need to tell you, I'm in Edinburgh. Oh. Yeah, we know! We just heard it in the setup. They always do this.
Yeah,
come
very
on.
Very true.
What did you spot a handbrake turn of the week while we're kind of in this arena?
I don't know if this is... It seemed like a relatively coherent week. I don't know if this is more of a Stockholm syndrome style thing. Yeah. After watching multiple episodes, you're like, yeah. Oh, actually, that isn't too bad a link, given the disparate nature of the segment.
They've made a conscious effort to change this.
Yeah.
They really have. It's been in the last 4 months.
Yeah, funny that.
Isn't it? A show that we know they listen to, and they have taken out the handbrake turns. Yeah. I didn't see one this week.
There was a good one. If we count him back on Friday.
Yeah, go.
Sarah Cox. Is this her first appearance?
What's her first appearance? You're absolutely right.
So she took this one very seriously. It was shifting from an interview with Danny Dyer,
I know where you're going. I got this one.
What's great about this is that they decided to weirdly try out their accents as well in the middle of Sarah Cox's handbrake turn. But she her voice went really peculiar when she was moving from Phil Mitchell and doing a Cockney impression. And she was like, but anyway, Network Rail have just sold off all their arches for £1.5 billion. To which Alex Jones jumped straight in with like, oh, that's 60 million ponies, Danny. And like we're trying to do this weird Cockney accent with a Welsh... Oh, it was...
That's 60 million ponies, Danny.
Oh, it's getting worse.
Danny Dyer looks disgusted, doesn't he? Absolutely disgusted. Like you're taking the piss.
If only he'd been Chinese. And Alex had gone, we're still doing this. You know?
We've talked about this before. It's fine to do accents.
Yeah. This was Danny Dyer talking about Pinter, which they then turned into, well, Phil Mitchell. You always see him down the arches, just like Network Rail.
What are you doing? Yeah. That's a quote. Was it Sarah saying Albert Square's arches are full of drama?
Yes.
That's it.
Or
that's
something.
It.
But yeah. But so are the real ones.
And then the voice shifts into the Network Rail. It was that little...
There's a really odd fact about how Danny Dyer, he was discovered by Harold Pinter, the playwright.
Yeah.
And Pinter had said he is going to be one of the great actors of his generation.
Yeah.
He was not wrong.
He's not wrong. It's always seen as being a hilarious clash of high and low culture. Oh, Harold Pinter thought Danny Dyer was good. Maybe Danny Dyer is fucking good, people.
Yeah, I have such respect for Danny Dyer because he delivers. I mean, he's a good actor, but when he's a guest, he delivers as a guest. There was a great bit in the Danny Dyer one where their film was about a peacock. Did you see this?
No, the peacock, Dirty
Bertie, favorite
show.
It was all to do with, they talked to him about Love Island, didn't they? Because obviously his daughter Danny Dyer was on Love Island. And they said something like, inspired by Danny Dyer's daughter on Love Island, we thought we'd play matchmaker. The thing is, there are loads of human dating shows. Already you're going, what? So we've gone in a slightly different direction. It's a film about a lonely, white, fully white peacock that just escapes from and now lives in a village, okay?
This was my favourite moment for the whole week because this woman who had this white peacock in her garden, she said, well, there is a white peacock farm up the road, but I called them and they said, no, he's not one of us. She believed it. She went, oh, okay, then I better look after it. I was just like,
yards away.
This peacock that was terrorising the neighbourhood as well. Like, it was being a real dick of a peacock. And these people are going like, no, I don't think it's ours. No, a real dick of a peacock. No, I don't think it could be one of ours. You take care of it.
It was waking everyone up at 4 in the morning, doing its peacocky noise on the houses. No, not us. No.
Sorry, if I'm following this correctly, they set this up with a woman.
No, the woman, she ended up with this, and so she tried to find it. It was making mating noises and waking everybody up. She took it upon herself to shut it up.
That's your answer to everything.
Worth a shot.
Did she manage to find it a mate?
Denise, I believe, was the peacock.
Denise. Can you end up being called Denise?
It was. I don't know if they actually... hit it off, but they were forced together regardless. So
in her garden, and the peacock, you know, it would strut around the village, it'd become a little local celebrity in its own right. This Bertie, Dirty Bertie the peacock.
Noticed as well when we were watching this, and I know you say that these films are often filmed in advance, and you're never quite sure when they're going to appear. Mm. We were wondering if this was possibly filmed at the... Well, we were kind of hoping it was filmed at the World Cup because that village was absolutely coated in St. George's flags.
Really?
Like, everywhere, yeah.
No, that was filmed last week.
And that's why the peacock was white.
In the World Cup.
Yeah. There was a classic film, which was a absolutely non-time-specific film, but it also had no point. I don't know if you saw this one. This was the episode with Jonathan Pryce and Eileen Atkins were on.
Yes, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't remember her name, but she's a woman from Lancashire who looks like a sort of cross between Barry Cryer and Dennis Norden. And she's a gardener. And she met Rachel Koo, yes, the chef. And I cannot tell you what this piece was about, other than someone went, do you know who I'm in love with and would like to film? The cook, Rachel Koo. And this funny woman, who's the gardener, went to see Rachel Koo. And they went back to Honiton, which was the first place that Rachel Koo, who is originally from Croydon, had been on holiday. And Rachel Koo walked them round and ate some radishes and pointed at some bushes, and then it was over. It had no content whatsoever. None. Absolutely none.
I've seen it twice and I still couldn't. I still wasn't absolutely sure why they were doing it. Because they made a big thing of her living in Sweden at
they
one
did.
Point. And then
She said, I met a Swede, not the vegetable. And let me tell you, that was a fucking laugh. Everyone was slapping their thighs over that joke. Yeah. Christ almighty.
It wasn't shaped like a cock, like in the Blackadder.
It was like a thing of going, the historic figure, Rachel Koo, revisits the places that made her Rachel Koo. Does anyone know who Rachel Koo is?
No.
It was like focus grouped perfect though, wasn't it? It's like for one show viewers. Fruity lady, regional accent,
yep.
Gardening, Devon, cookery, countryside. Nothing in it.
Nothing at all.
Well, it was like George Maguire's butterfly film that they shoved on the end of the Johnny English thing. It was 2.5 minutes long. There was nothing. It's like it was a half-made film that didn't really work at all. And
yeah.
Then they sort of... Ron Atkinson's had his 27 minutes of promoting
Ron Atkinson.
There are
actually a lot of ones obviously filmed during the summer.
Yeah.
But there was the flying ant.
What was blindingly obvious about the butterfly one was when we watched it, came back to the studio, this is right at the end of the programme, having all been about Ron Atkinson and not Ben Miller at all. Matt said, well, obviously we're at the end of the summer and out of butterfly season, so do look out for them next May. What? You obviously filmed that? God's sake.
There was one that was filmed more recently, and that was Angelica Bell reporting on drug abuse in Shoreditch.
Well, this was part of their obvious, like, be a bad fucking grass theme for the week. Where it was like, hey, everybody, snitch your neighbour. It was really weird. There was two. It was like a double whammy. Of the day before was encouraging people to take pictures of people using their phones and their cars.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And Dom from Don't Get Dom.
Well, he was very excited, wasn't he?
He really got a taste for it, didn't he? He was really like to bring bad guys down.
And then
there was this...
It was very odd. It was a thing that made the papers like the standard, because a lot of residents in Shoreditch had put up signs saying, drug dealers parking here, because they wanted to bring attention to the fact that drug dealers were working around there. The bit that really fucked me off to absolutely unbelievable levels is there was a guy, your average Shoreditch hipster, which, let me tell you, is at least 15 fucking years out of date. And he said, I moved in here 5 years ago, he said, and it's definitely got worse. There are people selling drugs quite openly every night.
Moved in 5 years ago, and over the last 5 years, it's like massively changed. There's more and more and more and more drug deals happening, more and more addicts coming along. It's like Zombie Nation.
Have you thought about leaving the area?
It's not about leaving, it's about how do we solve the problem.
Do you remember what Shoreditch was like 10 years
20
ago?
20 years ago.
Do you remember what it was like 15 and 20 and 25 years ago? It smelt of heroin, right? Everyone you spoke to was off their fucking box. And the idea that some people are selling a little bit of draw here and there was important enough to get Angelica Bell down and people going, it's really changed. 15 years ago... If you'd have set fire to Shoreditch, everyone in the southeast would be off their fucking nut on crack. Because those fumes from burning Shoreditch... a really odd thing to sort of go, it's really got worse. No, it hasn't.
They do.
Don't lie.
The grassing thing, though, drug pun intended, did, you're absolutely right, the high-vis one-show squad went out, didn't they? Did you see where
why?
They...
Why were they in high-vis jackets? I can't work this out.
I was confused as well. I mean, I'm guessing it was a BBC health and safety. They're standing by a road. Therefore,
they were
on
the pavement.
Behind railings as well. Yeah. Like, it couldn't have been...
But Dom from Don't Get...
Don't get done. Get Dom.
Get,
yeah.
Well, Dom. Get Dom.
Don't get Dom.
Dom. Just don't get Dom.
Don't get Dom.
Don't get Dom. You're absolutely right. He was so excited about the whole thing. People just... It was really encouraging people to just grass on people for not... You know, for people who were stationary. Now, I know if your engine's running and you're on the phone, you know, and they did spot a guy on an iPad while he was driving past and, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and they were filming them and sending... Because it was... The police have said, film people using their phones in the car, send it to us, and we'll go after them. I.e., do our job for us, if you will, and then we can get our prosecution statistics up because you've got filmed evidence. Why don't you do that, public?
One of the policemen actually gave a nice little bit of small print in that. It's like, we'd be happy to act on these tips if you send them in and you prepare to file a statement and possibly turn up to court. Hang on a minute, what are
but
we getting
Tom got so excited. So this high-vis crew, were the one-show squad, were seeing how many people they could get on camera, on their phones, with Dom. Right, at one junction. Where is it, Surrey or somewhere? I can't remember.
Birmingham somewhere.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Yes, you're right, it was Birmingham. And get me in my southern bubble. and he spotted this motorcyclist, and he got very excited. A motorcyclist stopped at a red light, and he's saying a guy with the high vis on, who's just some people they've randomly trawled the streets for, go, film him, right? And this guy's got his phone out. He's going, zoom in, film him, like that, and he can't. So the camera crew that are also standing there, i.e., it's obvious this is all happening, zoomed right in on this guy on his motorbike, who's stopped.
Probably looking for directions.
Delivery, but it was, you know, food driver. In fact, they were deliberately non-specific. He's a food driver.
Yeah.
Look at him. And so they got him, you know, looking at his directions. I'm sure it was his sat-nav or whatever. But he was stationary. And Dom was just trying, nothing was happening. And Dom was just going, he's insane. he won't even be able to tell, he said, when the lights go green. This is insane. Look, he's pulling away. Yeah, because he noticed the lights went green and he put his phone away.
It was at the verge of getting a bit like Channel 4 Michael Crick, like chasing him down the street, going like, what are you going to do about this?
Why are you trying to kill all the children?
He was going, what a donut, he went.
What a prick.
And then they cut back to the studio and... said to Matt Baker, would you do that? And he's like, no, I wouldn't stand by the side of the road and film anybody. It's just like, maybe if I was in a car and I saw it, but would I stand by the side of the road? No.
No, but he absolutely made it clear that he would be a snitch. It was more than sort of like, I'm not going to waste my time, but I'll definitely shot people in.
If there's something in it for me, I'm going to do it.
I'll turn people over. No worries
about
that.
He did a very, very emotional appeal about Hurricane Alley this week as well, where they said, look, there's lots of things are going on, and Alex sort of said, oh yeah, I believe the lights are out on your parents' farm as well, and he properly looked like he was going to cry.
Yeah.
He really went, yeah, it's been very hard.
That was the other best bit, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's literally a 40 minute window where Matt's parents have had to stop killing animals. He is devastated.
He can't quite swing at the right bit.
This was one with Michael Palin on. 12, wasn't
no,
it?
I think this is the Bonnie Langford day.
This is Bonnie Langford.
Oh, okay.
Because he accidentally made up Greenlock, a place, and just made it up.
They talked about the winds and a cruise ship, and he said it's in Greenlock and it's having problems. And a lot of people then contacted the one show to say, no, Greenock, because that's a place.
But it was also the bit where Alex Jones offered her sincere condolences to everybody that didn't have power. The exact demographic. I mean, I know a lot of people weren't watching the one show, but the ones very specifically not watching the one show, the people whose tellies weren't working.
Pretty true.
That it really was the, our thoughts are with you at this difficult time.
Was.
It's
like it was so over the
trees
top.
Have fallen down. It's not the super typhoon going through Asia or North Carolina. Or
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And then you got treated to the sight of they had to move on very quickly from that. So they went, anywhere, here's Bonnie Langford. And Bonnie Langford had turned up in costume. And she looked like, imagine if Bonnie Langford was having a three-way with a queen mother and a swan, right?
Hang on, let's all take a moment to imagine that.
She
did. Hang on, Stephen. Which end's the swan?
It's sort of all over. The swan is the busy one. And
you break your arm, Bonnie!
She was doing a matinee of 42nd Street, and then she was going back to the evening one. Yeah. And they were really ramping up the whole, oh, you've got to be back, you've got to be back. And I did sort of think, it's a bit disrespectful to sort of go, I can squeeze in the one show. By the last link, she was on a stick mic because yeah. she was out the fucking door. But they ended it just watching her go in her Addison Lee to leave to the theatre. And they treated that like a great sort of like Sonny Lumiere ending. Here she goes. Wow, she's in the car. Off she goes. You're literally just watching a woman get into a taxi.
And they didn't cut away from them. There was like the last as the credits were about to roll. They were sort of stood there for a long time looking at the guy. The car had turned and gone. But they didn't want to turn back to the camera and be like, well, there's nothing left. So,
yeah, so they just had to keep facing that way. The whole running order's been done.
Langford told a great story. She had a great story. So when they first sort of chatted to her, they were talking about, oh, you're back at this theatre where you started off many, many years ago. And she told a story which I've heard before, but I've never heard her tell it. I've heard it told by other people. And it was a Gone with the Wind musical, which was a big flop. And Noel Coward had turned up in the audience. But they had a Shire horse on stage. And on the first night, the Shire horse had shat everywhere. And so Bonnie had said it left a couple of gifts on the stage. And there was anxious laughter where people go, where's this story going? And she went, a couple of steaming gifts.
On the very, very first performance, we had a lot of royalty. Well, we had Princess Anne came, and then some notable people, including Sir Noel Coward. Mm. Now, the show went up half an hour early because it was a special gala night. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, that's not happening tonight. And there was a horse in the show, a Shire horse. A real one. Burning of Atlanta. We had a train. I mean, it was massive. It was epic. And then in the second act, there was me, 7 years old, Dot, curly hair, and doing a number, very, very cute. But the show was not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And Sir Noel Coward was in that audience as well. After the show, the producer, Harold Fielding, asked Sir Noel what he thought could be done to improve the show. And he said, well, I have to actually precede this with the fact that everyone was nervous, including Charlie the horse.
Right.
Unfortunately, on the first night, Charlie the horse left some little gifts, slightly steamy packages, and the stage manager had to walk on with a shovel and a broom and sweep them up. And Sir Noel said at the end of the performance, well, the only way to improve the show is to solve two problems at once, shove the child up the horse's behind. And that was me. So now I'm still back. I'm back there without a horse, but with a lot of glam. And, it's a fantastic theatre.
A pro. Yeah. Why couldn't everyone else have been a pro and just gone, what a story. Bonnie Langford, everyone.
Yeah.
Marvellous. Alex did one joke, which I was like surprised to hear that from Alex. And she went, Noel Coward, what does he know about theatre? An actual joke.
Yeah.
Man.
Was that said in her ear by someone?
Unless she confused him with Noel Edmonds or someone like that.
Maybe she, how come it was right? She might have just been asking. Yeah. Noel Coward, what does he know about theatre? Please tell me, Bonnie.
I have a slight obsession with Alex now because everything she says has got menace and a threat behind it. You know, she can say something really sweet and you're thinking, she didn't mean that.
She's got a dark agenda going on.
Oh, man.
I mentioned the Michael Palin episode. I don't know whether you saw this, but he was on to promote a book, Michael Palin. Mm-hmm. He's got a new book coming out. But he was also, this is what I mentioned earlier about he was cleverly promoting two things. The other one was his series, Michael Palin Goes to North Korea, mm-hmm. which is on Channel 5
for some inexplicable
reason.
Yeah.
Why isn't that on a BBC One? Anyway, the One Show's graphics department aren't kept that busy, shall we say. I don't think so much. We've talked about this before. They've now come up with these graphics at the beginning of the films that they do, where they give them titles, which they didn't used to do. So they had, talking to Michael Palin, he's talking about North Korea. And they had a clip of one of the big marches in Pyongyang in the square. And they flipped it so it looked like the entire military of North Korea were holding flags that depicted Michael Palin's face.
Hmm.
Okay, as they flipped over. And it was on screen for a second and a half, 2 seconds, as a little welcome to Michael Palin. And you think, someone in graphics, right, to get that right, has spent a day?
3 days.
Working on that?
3 days.
For that? And they were probably pleased to do it, to be honest with you. Michael Palin was and sort of went, yeah, that's nice, like that. And it was just one of those things where someone's had an idea, but the execution of it has just had to, oh, I'll take ages. No, let's do it anyway. And they've just done it, and it just sort of threw it away.
Matt gets very excited by those bits. I think they say to him, you know, that we've got this guy coming on, we're going to do this thing, and he's going to love it. And Matt goes, they are going to love it. And then they do it, and the person goes, like that, and Matt goes, they loved it. They loved it.
Yeah, and in subsequent meetings, you know, they're just going, remember how they loved it.
But they sort of didn't care about anything to do with this, because it was like, Michael Palin has just been to North Korea, has got a TV show about it. Michael, who chooses where you go on holiday? Is it you or your wife?
There was a similar thing there where they had Jonathan Pryce on. Do you know what? If someone had said to me, is Jonathan Pryce a good raconteur before this week? I'd have said, well, he must be. He's a great actor.
He was boring, awful.
He's one of the worst people I've ever seen on television.
Yeah. There was a really...
And I've seen Fred West. At least he had stories about his sexual prowess.
So, Fred, you ever seen a peacock?
I started... this episode to watch it, and you're absolutely right, but I realise I wrote not very much down about anything to do with Jonathan Pryce because of that
the
reason.
The episode went on for at least an hour.
Yeah, it was nothing. It was the one with the new feature. Remember the new feature we've talked about, which is
You Know Who You Are.
A classic this week. I mean, this was Dawn Robinson in Rochdale
with her 92-year-old father Bill,
stranded at a station, and a stranger got Bill home. You know who you are. Right.
And say one thing, right?
What the fuck is that?
Someone drove Bill home because he couldn't get through to the taxi firm. They drove him home. And at no point did Bill, with his 92 years of experience, think to fucking ask, what's your name? Right? And why don't you give me your number and I'll give you a ring and say thanks. Instead, he rings the one show and they go, we'll never be able to work out who this person is. Bill, next time, fucking ask her a name. And then they can go on the one show and go, and thanks to Susan. Done. Yeah.
No, she knows who she is.
92 years old. Learned nothing. Jeez, I'd have left him there. I will. I'm going to move to where he lives solely so I can hang around the station.
Watch him.
That would be a better You Know Who You Are section. Yeah. It's got the menace that Alex Jones is used to.
A man was left to sleep rough at a station, 92 years old, found frozen.
He shouted at.
Remember 92-year-old Bill. Remember, he was rescued.
A man was shouting at him for being rude, and then he died.
But this
well, you know
you
who you
know
are.
Who you are.
You know who you are.
And we do as well, Mark Haynes.
I do it again.
Also in this episode was those two freaks from University Challenge.
Eric Monkman and Bobby Seagull.
Yeah. I don't know which is which. I still don't know, like with Anton Deck, really, until the drink driving thing. I don't know which is which out of Eric Monkman and Bobby. Is Eric Monkman the one who talks with his eyes closed but has got a permanent grin on his face?
That's Monkman. The one that, as soon as somebody responds to something he said, looks just delighted. Like, he can't believe it that somebody's responded to him.
And the other one, Seagull, was a bit chippy. It was a bit chippy about the whole thing, but they kept mentioning things that Monkman had, and he kept sort of going, well, I've done it as well.
They did have a pro-Monkman bias.
It was like the Rowan Atkinson, Ben Miller thing all over
really
again.
It really was.
It was like, we like Atkinson, we like Monkman, we don't like Ben Miller, we don't like
Seagull. A classic example of what I think is the nerd joke here, where they were saying, what's the show about? And it's called The Genius Guide to Great Britain.
Yeah.
These are two of the cleverest men on Earth. And let me tell you, when it comes to working out what show they're going to be on, we don't have any geniuses in television. So they send these two guys just around on a road trip. And the basic joke that Eric Monkman had that he was so pleased with was, we go to places of scientific interest, places of historical interest, and places of historical and scientific interest. I really thought, this is going to be a long half hour.
And it was. They had one show viewers send in questions, because they were on University Challenge, famously, to try and stump them, the words they used.
Yeah, there was a funny thing about when they get clever people in on the one show, they like to sort of treat them like idiots. And so they were sort of going, we've got another question for you. Like they were talking to elderly people. These are geniuses. You don't need to sort of speak slowly.
They're geniuses, though. But what is great about that is that geniuses should be left to their own genius devices, which is basically University Challenge. But instead, you then take them out of their comfort zone completely and put them in the spotlight of A, their own television programme that they are not really geared up for, and B, put them on the one show where they have to interact with human beings. It's a road trip, but it's a car crash waiting to happen. To be fair, though, I mean, every single one of those questions, I just went, I've no idea. And perhaps that's why I should be a viewer of the One Show and the University Challenge.
Ian Atkins was saying, she said, if I get six right.
Oh,
she said, if I get six right when I'm watching University Challenge, then that is wonderful.
That section was an absolute crystallization of everything that is wrong with the interview technique on the One Show. That is, it's a decent question to come off the back of that and be like, oh, when you watch at home, how many do you reckon you get? Yeah. And if it was 4 seconds each, you get six. Well, how many do you get, Jonathan? About three? Great. Okay, well, here's the first question. It went on for like 25 seconds, just dangling the whole time. And it was like nobody knew who to pick it up. And it makes the whole thing excruciating. You think, why did you ask this? Why have you wasted my time with this? I'll never need to know how many questions Alex Atkins gets right.
I do have a thing where I go, is Alex the greatest person on television ever? I don't know, but I don't think anyone's more honest. And so when they were saying, well, you know, I get sick, and Jonathan Pryce had said three, but three good ones. And Alex just said, I mean, one is amazing. she might be the best.
And she actually got a question right of those four.
She did,
Monkman and Seagull fucked it up.
What was the Welsh for cuddle?
Kutch, yeah. I mean, it's playing to her strengths.
It's worth
what's
saying.
The Welsh for cuddle?
Yeah.
Sing Coley, I think.
It's worth saying. I said with complete confidence.
That's Scottish for cuddle.
It's no language for cuddle. it's worth saying. I sat there with my
prison slang for cuddle.
Not yet, Chris. By your time.
If this goes out in December. Two thumbs up. It's worth saying, I sat with my wife and really confidently said, oh, I know this one. Yeah, it's hug. Welsh for cuddle is hug. I was really confident. And I was super aware. Not only can I not get University Challenge questions right, I can't get one show questions right.
When the guests do step out and comment on the One Show as an entity as well, Danny Dyer did, actually. At the beginning of the show, he'd gone, oh, it's a lovely little show, isn't it? It's like a... Oh, it gives you a little cuddle, doesn't it? This show, lovely, lovely little show.
A little hug for our Welsh listeners.
And then they talked about his, without going there, they talked about, you know, when he called David Cameron a twat.
Yeah.
And they said, so you know, you called David Cameron a
twit.
A twit. A twit. And he sort of went, do you want to go there? It's 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I had some real nice Sean Ryder on TFI Friday.
Come on, Danny. Well, he's a twat, isn't he? He played the game. Good old day. He skirted around it. But then they did the peacock thing out of nowhere. And he cut back to him on the sofa, staring at the screen they get to watch. And he cut back to him and he just went, it's a nutty show, this, isn't it? I just watched a peacock pull in another peacock. I mean, I'm over the moon for it. I love Danny Dyer.
That's great. They again, when they introduced Ian Atkins, they were doing a horrible bit at the top where they were going, Matt and I have been having an argument about who's the most impressive of our guests. And they went through some sort of odds and ends. But they didn't follow up on them. And so the last line of it was they went, well, Ian Atkins once during filming demanded a monkey. And then they cut to them. But there was never any reference again to the circumstances of what this story was.
Tell us about the monkey. Yeah.
There's no going off script, just there. There's no interaction. There's no follow-up. Not in one episode. Not one presenter.
It happened really with Michael Palin. So they played him... It was in Hungarian. This was that came off the back of the Rory Reid travelling around Hungary using various apps to
navigate.
And they came out of it and they said, so Michael, have a listen to this. See if you know what it is. And they... played a couple of lines from the Lumberjack song translated into Hungarian. He did it twice and he was like, no, I don't know what it is. They told him. And then he said, oh, well, I actually had to learn the Lumberjack song in German. To which they both went, oh? And went to start speaking and Michael Palin said, would you like me to tell you what it was?
Good
and then they were like, not really. You can. And then it was like...
He
was just going straight on.
And carried on, and he went, well, do you want me to tell you what it was? Setting that up for you.
The future of this is them saying, do you have an anecdote about a monkey? And the person going, yes, and going, great. Do you have an anecdote about losing your coat? Yes, great. Do you have an anecdote about being in a car? No. Oh, that's a shame. Okay, next, let's go to see Giles Brandreth, who is skinning a pig.
You know, we were talking about the graphics department. Mm. So the sound department got something exciting to do as well this week. And it always happens near the beginning of the show where the guests are. When other departments, we've had jokes previously about cameramen. We know their names now. Yep. I know you're writing a list.
There will be a reckoning.
Yeah. So the graphics department got a look in with Michael Palin's face. And the sound department got an effect to do. So there was the beginning of the show. They opened it. This was Sarah Cox and Alex Jones. And they started off by going a big hello to, I think she was called Nadia Snow in Scunthorpe. Get this, she got a free prize this week with a bag of ready salted crisps. And they had a little clip of this woman who filmed it on her phone opening some crisps. And just a whole potato came out. Right. Then it came out, and you sort of go, "What was that? What was that? What
is this Brexit?
What is this? What are we watching?" And then they went, "You should have seen what came out when she opened the milk." They stared into the camera, and then there was this moo sound effect like that. And Sarah Cox went, "Oh, very good." What? And I was just staring at it, going, "What are you? What was that?" It's a woman's got a potato in a bag, and now you've
done better that. If they'd have cut to some caviar and then they'd had the noise of a fish having a wank.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I was then thinking,
I'm looking forward to where this is going.
I'm glad you said that, because I sat there I paused it for thinking, well, I'm going to mention this on the podcast. The only other thing I could think of they could say was, what else could she have opened in the kitchen? And then they should have had a visual of someone opening a jar of jam and a gollywog falling out. But given the one show's, let's say, history with the gollywog, it's probably best they didn't. Camilla, you'll remember that. Was it a Carol Thatcher incident?
I don't remember this at
all. It? This was a great bit of gossip. Carol Thatcher was a presenter.
Oh, yeah, God,
she
yeah.
was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember?
And she was in the green room.
In the green room.
Oh, yes, it was.
And there was
didn't remember it being the one show.
Racial slur.
Yes, that's right. And she was actually sacked for it from the one show. Yeah.
I think we've seen her since.
No. It's John, you know, it's very, very easy to say that people who do bad things should be let go from jobs, isn't it?
There was another VT with a guy who was obviously making a real cry for help. Did you see it? It was the A to Z when they went to Quorn.
Oh, I've seen that.
I had this down as dullest segment, right?
Yeah.
It was so dull.
Between Matt Allwright's A to Z of the UK or the domain of the Yellow Meadow Ant. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah. And he was sort of
got a haircut. This was like the big, like his big thing to do in Quorn was asking the locals, like, oh, so what's there to do? Like, well, you could get a haircut.
It's a nice place, though.
And the next morning, he was having breakfast, and he said, the voiceover was, is there a better way to start the day than with haddock? And it just cut to him going, yes. I don't know if it was deliberate, but it looked like a real cry for help. Like, please get me out of here. I'm not eating this fucking shit. Don't want to be here.
Absolutely right, because I thought that is that's a director's fuck up there. Or it was absolutely...
Because it was a really quiet, like...
Yes.
It was the sort of thing like...
But the timing of it was perfect. So it was almost like, you're absolutely right, the whole crew... To us personally, they would just go, please help us.
Please never send us to Quorn again.
Help us.
Where's P going to be? Where the fuck are they going to send us to P?
But that's it. The plate was put down, and the idea was he was going, yes, to the plate. But the editing made it go, is there a better way?
Hang on. Yes. So there's a thing they're running, which is A to Z of Britain, is there?
Yeah.
We have been doing this for nearly a year. I have never seen one of these before.
I've written those exact words here.
No way. I
have never
seen one of these. I haven't either.
So have we missed A to whatever comes before Q? Don't ask me. Or have they started at... They can't have started at Q.
No, because they explained at the beginning how they struggled, because they found a place called Quorn, like the vegetarian Quorn. And
This has not run for a year.
Well,
maybe he goes every time he needs a haircut, and it's just like once every 3 months. They've done it from the start.
This is, I mean, you can do anything on the one show, can't you? Because nobody is paying attention. You can do anything. No. You can say, you know, this is number 151 in this series that we do, and it's the first one. It's a scam, and we should get Dom Littlewood to shut it down.
Is there any other business? Anything we've missed out that anyone wants to bring up?
There was a section in... they were talking to Michael Palin about his new book, which is about ships, and they were talking about seafaring. And Michael Palin was talking, you know, but he's obviously passionate about it, and said, you know, I've always found it very interesting, and water covers 71% of the planet. And in the background, Matt said, Oceania.
I couldn't figure out what
he was talking about. I was like, what is that a word I don't know? So I looked it up. I know there's Oceania, which is the sort of
Australian continent
that they call. And then I was like, Oceania's a club. There used to be a club Right, there was one in Leeds. I remember at university, I went to Oceania. I was like, is he confused now?
His family farm is in Durham. But what we need to work out is where he went to university.
Yeah.
It might be an agricultural college. It's very difficult. Oceania was great. Good. Really good. God, that's a flashback.
What Matt Baker was having.
I wonder if I ever off with Matt Baker. Maybe that's what this podcast is all about.
There was a weird moment on the Friday show, though, with Nile Rodgers on, where he was kind of interacting as if he was on a normal show. And then he went off and did a song which sounded like a kind of normal song. You're thinking, just for a minute, this is kind of what I imagine BBC imagined the One Show to be, a sort of, you know, post Jonathan Ross or Terry Wogan style happy friendly show with real stars.
Were you saying that, Camilla? That's actually throwing me.
Only minute.
The One Show is an attempt to do stuff like Wogan, which looks really simple to do.
Yeah.
And they can't get it right.
They even fucked up that link. So she was trying to introduce it, and I don't know who the vocalist is in that Chic song, because she went, and it's Chic featuring, and then suddenly boom boom boom, like the drums kick straight in over the top of her, and you couldn't hear a word she was saying, so she didn't get to finish her sentence.
It is funny, because it doesn't seem like it should be as hard as it is to do the One Show and to do it well. You get Rowan Atkinson on, you get Chic on, you know, you've got Michael Palin on.
They had great, I mean, good guests.
Yeah.
Chic and Danny Dyer. I mean, that's a dream show. And yeah, 20 minutes of it was, come on, this is a fucking peacock we're looking at.
Well, we came in with peacocks. We're going to just sort of end with that butterfly film that we talked about, which was squashed right at the end of the Johnny English. The One Show. It's called The Rowan Atkinson Show, wasn't it? Where this pointless film, as I said, was 2.5 minutes long, about a butterfly in Edinburgh that they wanted to spread around the rest of Edinburgh. That was kind of it. There's some shots of the butterfly, and then they grew two yellow flowers on the roof of Holyrood, the parliamentary building, because they've got a roof garden and it attracts that. And it would, and it, they explained helpfully that this would attract the butterfly from wherever it was over there, closer into the city centre, because they put these flowers on this roof.
Right.
And helpfully the butterfly expert said, and it works because butterflies don't have to negotiate roads or go through buildings. Thank you very much. But then George Maguire just said, it doesn't look like much. And I thought, you have just described both your film and The One Show. Look, Camilla and Chris, thank you very much for, well, just stomaching the whole thing, really. And coming in.
Thanks Mark, for having us.
Thank you, as ever. Hey. Rate and review. We have to say this, because that's what people... I've listened to podcasts. People always say this.
This is the new being paid.
Yeah. Yeah, we pay us in stars. I do want to thank listener Kingswood Bird, which sounds like something One Show would do a film about, on iTunes, who said that this podcast is unique because it's improved by not watching the show the podcast is talking about.
Everything is improved by not watching The One Show.
Possibly you've stumbled across The One Show at an elderly relative's house and thus is forever linked to fondant fancies and the heating being turned up too high. This podcast celebrates the feeling of boredom crossed with an inability to look away. I think that kind of sums it up. So if you have a moment to review and comment, please do. But whatever you do, remember this. When you look at the television to look at The One Show, The One Show also looks back into you. Goodbye.